This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Lowell's is back in the saddle for another Thursday show. We got some loose ends that we talked about last week that we can pick up on. We also have some updates to the draft caddy. Pretty exciting for those of you doing Battle Royale drafts. We'll show those off. And a few other interesting stories from the world of DFS and sports betting. It's Lowell's with Pete and Brick. Let's do it.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in 1 for yes, 2 for no. Let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
All right. Welcome back to Lowell's. Everyone has enjoyed the thumbnail. You know, Brian and I don't often have, you know, a bunch of concrete topics for this show. So I always tell my designer, just do something generic, you know, put it on the thumbnail. You know, there's nothing you need to put on there. And he hit me with that. And I felt like that was well deserved this week.
That guy, I said in one of your tweets, he reminds me of like if you and George W. Bush had a baby. He kind of.
Yeah. I've got, you know what's so funny? So I finally, people kept tagging me in that guy. Content. So I finally went and checked him out. And so basically his entire bit is he basically grabs like any kind of processed food or whatever, Krispy Kreme donuts, gas station food, and just says, I don't give a fuck. And then lists off like some of the bad ingredients and basically says, I don't give a fuck that it's bad for you. And then just eats it on camera. And he's crushing, like literally just doing that.
That sounds like a TikTok job. Yeah. Is it? Yeah. Yeah. They're killing it on TikTok, man.
He also is a reformed meth addict, which also, you know, certainly plays into the bit. But like me, you know, the skin is looking pretty good for him. Like he looks a lot younger than most meth addicts look for their age, I feel like.
Yeah, meth especially. I mean, heroin, I could see. I think that's easier on the body, but that meth, man, that doesn't that ages people.
Well, yeah, you're like, okay, this guy used to do a bunch of hardcore drugs, went to a bunch of Grateful Dead shows, now eats a bunch of junk food. I'm like, this guy looks incredible. Like, if that's my comp, you know what? I'm going to take it.
Did you see that little bit going around Twitter, TikTok of the guy who there's like a new fish. There's like a new Grateful Dead band.
Really?
Have you heard of this? I want to say it starts with a G. I can't remember. And he was just doing a bit about, you know, a buddy who listens to this band.
No,
obviously you haven't seen it. It was pretty funny, you know, just classic, you know, kind of like fish, Grateful Dead jokes.
Yeah.
For like 2 straight minutes. I want to say, what is it? I didn't like it too. So I should have, damn it. So I could find it. But yeah, there's like one of the bits was like, he's like, yeah, I just got home. It's 7 in the morning. I just got home from whatever their band name is. They played 3 songs. They played three songs.
Yeah, but they were each 45 minutes long.
No, they were each like 7 hours. Is what yeah. Because he got home at 7 a.m. the next day. Yeah.
Yeah. There used to be this incredible podcast. One of my favorite comedians who passed away. I've mentioned him on a few shows before. Harris Whittles. People know him as the guy who invented the humble brag. But he had this podcast. He was a huge Fish fan. And he had this podcast called Analyze Fish. And in earnest, he would bring on fellow comedians and try to get them to like Fish. And he would like play songs. Like he would kind of interview them and be like, what kind of music do you like? Can I find the perfect Fish track to be your gateway into Fish? And it was so funny because he wasn't trying to do a bit. He was earnestly trying to get them to see what he saw, and it just failed like 9 times out of 10, because even listening to it out of context, it just sounds so bad. And he basically comes to the conclusion, like, yeah, you just need to be drugged out of your mind at a festival, at a concert, just like vibing out with the homies for like 5 hours. It does not work in isolated fashion.
If you're not like a Dead fan or similar, what do you think of this? It seems like the John Mayer and the Grateful Dead combo is going over pretty big.
Yeah.
You see they were touring? Davis went.
I actually went a couple years ago with Pat Thorman. He invited me. They were playing at Gillette, and it was John Mayer was on the tour then. It's incredible to me that he's like still doing that. Like he just loves jamming with those guys.
Yeah, he gets to just fill every little like guitar dream of his and just play forever without anyone complaining. Like you're playing a little bit, you're a little overplaying here, John. So it's probably pretty fun. I mean, my religious studies teacher in college, his son was Fish's like cameraman. Strange little.
That's random.
Yeah, and like
followed him around.
Yeah, so like they would do, you know, I guess they do like big shows going on all around too. Like there's those big like balloon animals that are like coming at you throughout the show and stuff.
Yeah.
And like, it's like part of it was his job. This is a long time ago to do that. And anyways, he was talking about how they all are on, you know, acid and shit like the entire time.
Isn't it weird, like the fact that even aside from the type of music, that they cultivated a fan base who were both like completionists, right? Like Fish fans, Grateful Dead fans, they care about every live show, every live set. Like even like the biggest Taylor Swift fans, are they like, oh, I gotta listen to the Kansas City show, you know, from September 13th. It's like, no, but the Grateful Dead and Fish fans, they're not only completionists, but they want to travel and go see show after show after show. I mean, it's just a great racket. Like if I was creating a band, I would want it to garner like a quite literal cult following, really good for selling out tours and selling every piece of, you know, merchandise that you make.
Nowadays, especially because you can't sell albums anymore. You can't sell CDs. So they make all their money on tour. So that would be a good strategy. I seriously doubt there's anyone like the Taylor Swift 2008 Kansas City was
no one's so talking good. About that.
So
no.
good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, but you know, the Grateful Dead 68.
Yeah.
They're definitely talking about.
I always crack up and they'll be like, oh man, the Fish MSG show 2004, second night at the Garden. It was, and I'm like, what were they doing all the other nights? They did like 9 shows at the Garden. What was so special at that one? And they're like, oh, well, they played the fourth track from that one. I'm like, okay. Yeah. I do think it's a, you had to be there to get it thing.
Yeah. And yeah. And be high. I mean, some Dead songs are good. I like some Dead songs. And Trey Anastasio, he's really good at guitar, obviously, but like it doesn't do it for me. But I imagine when you are just completely jamming, you know, every night for hours on end, there's going to be law of averages, going to be some good shows, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's got to happen.
The one thing that was always hard for me to wrap my head around, especially like the Madison Square Garden, like that kind of jam band stuff. Like I get it when it's outdoors at a festival and it's the summer and all that, like it just, you feel like you're at Woodstock or what I imagine it would feel like to be at Woodstock, but like in an arena in like a dark enclosed space, I've never seen the appeal of almost any kind of band, much less like a jam band in an arena format. It just, it doesn't feel like the vibes line up.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. What is a good arena band then? Like Poison?
I think it's No, I mean, it's probably not rock and roll music, right? It's probably more hip hop, you know, pop artists. Like, I think they lend themselves to like filling an arena sound.
Okay. All right. I saw Clapton in arena once. But nowadays he kind of, this is a while ago, but
yeah, there you go.
We know they're out there. Yeah.
What were you saying?
Clapton, because Clapton kind of he doesn't play rock anymore, really, you know, like blues and his hits, his like recent hits, you know, Change the World and, you know, whatever, the acoustic album stuff. Like, I think half his set's acoustic. I could see that for some arena stuff.
You guys, man, all the fish heads coming out. I'm telling you, that's just such a brilliant thing, because it's like, you ask any other person their favorite band, they're like, yeah, I've seen them a handful of times. Like, it was great. And then the fish fan's like, I've seen them 423 times. Like, what a great business model.
I agree with Ricky's comment here. The rap and hip hop, I guess I shouldn't say, I've probably never been to a rap or hip hop show, but it just seems like they're not playing any instruments.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That doesn't sound cool to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen a ton of shows.
Are they going to rap different? Do they freestyle their song? I think that would piss people off if they changed the lyrics and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, the acoustics too can definitely get messed up. I saw, like, at a music festival, I saw Public Enemy live once, you know, Flavor Flav, and he was all decked out, and that was pretty fun. But it was more like the spectacle of it, yeah, and not that the music was incredible.
That I could see. Like, what do they do with like T-Pain and like the voice modulators live? Do they have just voice modulators live, and he's got to like talk quiet, and then the computer does?
It doesn't sound enjoyable. No. Well, clearly a lot going on in the world of NFL and fantasy and sports betting that we're talking about jam bands for the first 10 minutes.
not a big week, you know. Yeah. And Pete, this is your Jordan game here. You're sick. You're getting over COVID.
Yeah. So. I've not been feeling well. Luckily, Wednesdays, I basically set up my schedule, are my off day. I'm watching April on Wednesdays, and then Tuesday is a pretty light day as well. But yeah, I was dragging ass Tuesday and Wednesday, feeling a little bit better tonight. We have the Shipcast tonight. I already told the guys I don't think I'm going to make it through the entire game. I've been going to bed at like 8:30 or 9 every night, but you know, we're fighting through it.
I heard you guys had a funny Swolecast moment.
Yeah, did you watch it, or did you?
I haven't. Maybe we should watch it live.
I know. I can't watch that back, even real time. The cringe was enough for me. Yeah, if you guys aren't familiar, we had, I guess, like, wires got crossed, you know, Kitchen. We have been getting mandates from big corporate that there need to be a few more ad reads on the show. Thankfully, that's not my job. That's Kitchen's as the host. But apparently there was some miscommunication on thinking it was a written ad read. And then the producer, though, actually had a clip. I think the clip was just supposed to be an example of like how the ad read goes. And it got loaded in and played. And it was for like Taylor Swift picks. And it took everybody by surprise. And I think somehow, though, on the Swolecast, it worked. It somehow worked for it to exist there.
I didn't even know it was an accident. I thought it was a bit.
There was a conversation about it in the group chat. I barely paid attention to it. But it has been so funny because our show is just so, I don't know, just a middle finger to any kind of organization or prep or thoughtfulness. So now trying to insert some benchmarks we have to hit is resulting in even more comedy.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are doing well though, right? You're getting views. Yeah.
Well, we've had this dynamic. It was because I was mentioning my schedule, how I tried to clear out my Wednesdays. And I suggested, like, hey, to make this work, would you guys be down to do the Swolecast on Tuesdays? And we already have the whole bit of it being like a first look show. And it's actually good from a YouTube perspective because people are searching for DFS content early in the week. So if you have a week 3 preview show up on a Tuesday, you get, and you get a longer shelf life, right? Like, I do my show with JM on Friday. That does good views, but it dies on the vine at 1 p.m. Eastern, or at least if the show posts on Tuesday. So the show has been doing well, except there are people who are in fact looking for, say, maybe more straightforward first look content, who are very angry about all the shenanigans in the show.
It's like titling your show Naked Yoga and not having naked yoga.
That's the one thing, like, this show doesn't have a problem. Like, I won't get comments in on YouTube that's like, Brick and Pete, like, get to the plays for like Thursday Night Showdown at this point. Like, the title of this video is literally, I did not endorse this Lulz thumbnail. So I think if one of the 133 people watching live right now are here for something other than just whatever the hell we're going to do, that would be a surprise to me.
Yeah. I mean, come on. How many years has it been? They should know. Brian and Chad here. That is the name of the band I was talking about. And I knew it was Goose, but I didn't want to say it in case I was wrong, because that sounds so stupid.
So I've literally never heard of them.
And I was hoping someone in chat would go, Goose? Is it Goose?
Is it Goose? And you're saying you know all about this just from a single, like, TikTok parody vid?
One TikTok parody. Yeah, you know, like the guy who does the fantasy stuff.
Yeah.
Like that, but for music, the guy. Okay. Did the exact same thing. You know, it's like 10-second bits, you know, 10-second. Yeah. Sayings that this type of person would say.
Yeah.
The only one I can remember is, I got home at 7 a.m. They did three shows. They did three songs. And it was awesome. You know, like,
it's funny because, not to, you know, drag us back to music talk, but when I used to always go to Chicago. I had like 3 or 4 years in a row where I went to Chicago for the Pitchfork Music Festival. And, you know, back then, I could have just looked you up in Chicago in another world. I was in your neck of the woods all the time, but not these days. Oh, yeah.
My buddies love that. What kind of music did you like back then?
The thing that was fun about the Pitchfork Festival is a pretty eclectic thing. So they had indie rock, they had pop bands, they would have like folk, they would have hip hop artists, because they review everything on the kind of like alt side of things. But yeah.
Did you like more like poppy rock stuff or more like indie rock stuff? More like, did you like Postal Service or?
Yeah. I was definitely into Postal Service. I like both of it. Like the more indie rock side, like, you know, the Walkman, Spoon, Wilco, stuff like that. There's a Chicago band for you. Oh, yeah. But then I also really got into more of like the pop side of like indie stuff.
What's the pop side? Give me some.
So details. like a Swedish singer like Robin, or there was a bunch of these bands like the New Pornographers or Architecture in Helsinki, like these really kind of more off the beaten path, like indie pop-ish bands were definitely right at my wheelhouse.
I've heard a new I was talking like Blink 182 pop, like,
yeah. I mean like middle school, you know what, like my mom like wouldn't let me listen to Blink 182 because there was it's actually kind of sad. There was this kid in high school in Colorado, and he was actually one of the best basketball players in the state at Columbine High School. So this is right after the shootings, and he was getting scholarship offers to Duke, and he was having an incredible year after the shootings, and he had so much survivor guilt that he ended up killing himself.
Oh man.
And he played that Blink 182 song, Adam's Song, which is about suicide. He played it on loop, like as he killed himself. And so my mom got a hold of that story and then heard that I was listening to Blink 182. And she's just like, no, you're not listening to this band. Which honestly, like for a mom who's like, I didn't put up a fight to it, but yeah, like Blink 182 was one of those bands I really liked, but it was hard to catch them without getting in trouble.
Right. Yeah. I mean, understandable, I suppose. Right.
Did you listen to that pop punk stuff?
No, because like I was just, you know, naturally contrarian. So anything everyone else likes, I can't like it. Yeah. I'm like, only now as I get older, I'm like, oh, I don't care. I like Tom Petty. but before, Tom Petty was puss rock. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, and you know, Blink 182 and all those bands were popular. So I couldn't like them. Some 41. What else was popular back then?
I went to a Warped Tour. It must have been like 2002 or 2003. And it was like, you know, Newfound Glory and Thursday and, you know, Bowling for Soup and like all of those like pop punk bands were definitely in vogue. And then it was like on the emo side. So you had like the Death Cab for Cutie, obviously Postal Service, Something Corporate. Like I definitely had my emo phase there as well. Dashboard emo. Confessional.
I was just gonna say. If you're emo, it's gotta be Dashboard. I saw them one time.
Yeah,
that's definitely a band I would not admit I liked, but I do.
Yeah,
it was Dashboard.
Yeah, I mean it. Like when you were like a somewhat like angsty teen, and you're brooding, or you're like that shit just hit the spot. I remember wearing the shit out of that album, A Mark Commission, A Brand of Scar. It just like looking back, it's like, come on, dude, fucking
no. It's good. It's still good. And you could tell your mom he was Christian too. So like, you know,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's like MXPX. There was another like Christian adjacent pop punk band. It was so funny too. I went to a Christian middle school, and one of the, they brought this guy to our school one day. And this must've been a thing that the parents were talking about, where it's like, oh, my kids want to listen to like this bad music. And I remember getting a sheet, and it had like all the bands, like Blink-182, all the, you know, secular bands, and an alternative Christian version of that band that you could listen to instead. Where it was like, if you like Blink-182, you could listen to MXPX. And I remember this sheet. I was like, all right, I guess these are my options.
The I just saw like a Blockbuster 1993 home video. Like someone went to Blockbuster and was searching.
Yeah.
And that just reminds me of like that kind of era, you know, '90s, late '90s or something.
Yeah.
And that's like, man, I wish we would go back to trying to get everyone to just do religious stuff. But I forgot what I was going to say. Someone in chat had a comment.
This Switchfoot was a big Christian band. I've seen Switchfoot in concert. That was one my parents would let me go to.
Now I remember what I was going to say. I don't know. Last time you listened to the radio. Do you like in the car?
Very rarely.
Yeah.
Very rarely.
I did it. I did it like a month ago or something. It's been like, I almost never do. And there's Christian rock channels and it wasn't that bad. It's like they've gotten good. They've gotten better. Yeah.
Well, I used to, you know, my parents would take me to church, and like, one of the things too is like even church bands, you know, they do praise and worship like before the sermon or whatever. And this is like more non-denominational, maybe like Catholic people aren't used to this dynamic, but like the bands would get like increasingly good, and there would be increasingly more fanfare. It'd be like, there'd be multiple guitarists and a bassist up there, and they're out up there like sounding like U2, like on a Sunday. And I'm like, are we praising God, or am I at a concert right now?
That's on at church. I get it. But like on the radio, I kind of get the whole, you know, do U2, do, you know, do something that sounds really good. Because then you like, remember the old South Park where Cartman starts the Christian rock band. I don't know if you saw that one. It's pretty classic, where Cartman starts Christian rock band, you know, and it's Jesus. It's really blasphemous stuff.
Yeah.
But like, it's because of the cliched rock stuff from when we were growing up, you know. But now I only listened one day, but there was like two songs. I'm like, this is Christian rock. This is not that bad. Like eventually he's praising Jesus and stuff. You're like, this is definitely Christian rock. But like, you probably can't tell if you're just listening, you know, if you haven't listened to the radio in a decade.
Yeah. Shout out to all these. You guys are taking me back. Reliant K was another one of my go-tos. DC Talk. What will people do when they hear that I'm a Jesus freak? What will people say when they find out it's true? Okay. There, you're really taking
DC
me back.
DC Talk,
now.
Even, what was that reference? That sounds political.
It might have been. Yeah, it might have been. I just took it at face value.
Faith Plus One, I definitely heard of.
What was I also going to say? Oh, these days, like, my version is, so April, we just, you know, we play kids music in the car nonstop. And she loves it. Like, just all the classic kid songs, Itsy Bitsy Spider, Wheels on the Bus. Yeah. And that's exclusively what we listen to in the car, to the point Lauren and I had to go check something out together the other day, and April wasn't in the car. And we noticed that we were driving for 10 minutes just talking with kids music. We're like, I was like, wait, why do we have this on right now?
Oh yeah. That, I mean, not only the kid will definitely get used to that, man. You're going to have to play the radio forever now.
Is this true? DC Talk meant decent Christian talk. That almost sounds so absurd to be true.
What his avatar, who is that? Why can I not? I know who that is. Why can I not think of it?
Yeah, Schmohawk, I've seen you have that forever. Remind us who that is.
It's not Eric Seidel, right? No.
No.
Like Eric Seidel from 1976 or something.
Larry David. Okay.
Oh, that's young Larry David. Okay, God.
Man, that's almost unrecognizable.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got to be 80.
Yeah.
He's got to be 80.
Jeez. You mentioned Eric Seidel. I've started reading, and now I'm forgetting the name of it, but Nate Silver's new book. Did you hear about that one?
Yes, I think, but I can't
remember the name. I think it just came out. I needed something after. What's the name of his new book? I'm only a few chapters. On the Edge. And so the whole book is about, like, the subtitle is The Art of Risking Everything. And he has this term for, like, basically he lumps anyone in who thinks probabilistically about things and then generally is like gambling or speculating on it in some form. He calls them like the river. And so he's going through all these different like tributaries of the river. And right now it's like all about the poker world. And he interviewed Eric Seidel for it, but it's pretty fun. Like, he kind of has all of these interviews. He does a little deep dive into the Garrett Adelstein and Jade poker hand. And I'm enjoying it as far as nonfiction stuff I've read.
I read his first one, but haven't thought about picking it up. It's amazing how polarizing he is. Actually, he's not even polarizing right now. I think just like kind of everyone's kind of not liking him.
Yeah.
Feels like he's getting a lot of hate.
What's the pushback to him right now? I mean, I obviously remember all the stuff right after the election.
It's because like he didn't have their favorite political candidate as the highest one in his model, and then he switched and then didn't have the other side's political candidate as highest in his model. And I mean, in their defense, he has been all over the place, but in his defense, like there was kind of, you know, a whole thing of switching candidates and stuff. Like, how do you pull this? And then there's always the classic. He's not a poller. He's an aggregator. Which he is. So like, I don't know. It's like, do you like that or not? Like, who gives a shit? But yeah, I think he's also kind of like in the middle, like, you know, a little bit. Like, and I don't think people like that.
Yes. Anymore. Yeah, and you definitely get that vibe reading the book. Like, it's actually kind of interesting how he does it. He like he set up his definition for, he calls it the river, those people in like the village, which he kind of, you know, assigns to like the more liberal woke like cohort or whatever. And he basically tries to steel man both sides of the argument, like in good faith. Like, these are the criticisms of the river, these are the criticisms of the village and stuff. Like, I guess that is the thing. He does strike me as like a slave to the numbers in a way I'm not really concerned about him having his own agenda. Maybe that's naive on my part. Everyone has their own agenda, but like, he does seem like that he cares about that above all.
I think the thing that I don't know if bugs me is the right word, but that I just kind of internalize about him is he's like a poker player, fantasy baseball player, who went into politics, kind of like, just, you know, it's not like his thing. And I think there's a lot of things he doesn't get about the game of politics.
Yeah.
But I think he's kind of starting to, because he does, I don't think he wants to play the games, but he has to kind of.
Would you say that's like, there's an analogy there between like, you know, fantasy stuff and DFS and Sims and modeling, and then like the knowing ball element, like he's learning to know ball of politics a bit?
Yeah, that's, I think there is, because he has to, like, I mean, there's a lot of hand building going on in Washington.
Yeah. Sacrilegious says, I think it has more to do with a 20% probability swing in his model output with no meaningful data to drive that change. And it was a substantial swing compared to literally anyone else who does that modeling at a high level.
I mean, yeah, there was a huge swing for sure. But like seriously, do you think the average person doesn't like him because there's a 20% probability swing? Like, no, they don't think that deep. They don't think that deeply.
Yeah. Let's see here. Brian, last week we checked in on DFS for you after week one. Did week two go any better for you?
Yeah, but that's just because week one was so bad.
So like, there was only one way to go.
Yeah. My cash lineup on Yahoo, I went with Mahomes over Kyler Murray, and apparently that held me back.
You've been consulting Davis on your Yahoo cash game lineup now?
Apparently. No, and I had McBride, and was there another Cardinal player? Dortch, maybe? Was Dortch like free on Yahoo or something?
Yeah, he was probably cheap, I assume.
Yeah. I think I had two Cardinals too. But yeah, and in the big field stuff, nothing popped at all. Nothing really close. I didn't have any Kamara. I had very, very little Kamara. And not enough Cardinals too either. At least on DraftKings.
Did you have you done any stuff like looking at the field fields play in like week one and week two? Have you noticed anything like different this year from in say the Millie Maker?
No, I haven't actually been looking at if any of the distributions are kind of changing, you know, like stacks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But maybe I should.
Actually, it's a good I would actually be curious about your thought on this. This has been a bit of a topic of conversation in the Discord the past day. So our guy PD has the BBMDB leaderboard. Where he also has where you can kind of query different things about the Best Ball Mania 5 data usage. And I'll pull his stuff up here. But one thing that was a huge trend in BBM 5 relative to last year was the combined ownership of the most popular stacks. Like last year, a lot of the top ones, I think, were in like the 30 to 35% range. In this year, you can see here, like, Jalen Hurts, AJ Brown was up at 50%, Dak CeeDee 48%, Tua Tyreek 44%. Obviously, this percentage is just relative to each. There's only one of these in each draft room, but it's a meaningful jump from last year. And I saw a lot of conversation around, has the pendulum shifted too far? Is this now not optimal to be stacking? Do you have any like snap takes on this? I know I didn't.
Well, this is another argument for doing some like post contest EV calculations for BR. I don't know if we talked about this. Davis wants us to add that. And
the million dollar idea.
We're gonna be so rich. And then you'll be able to tell pretty easily. And we probably will eventually do it. It's just we added ownership and it took like a long time, right? It's hard to do this stuff. But actually setting that up makes this part a little easier. Is this 50% of all drafts there's an AJ Brown Hurts stack?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. So obviously this is happening. So it's basically saying, in every other draft, the Jalen Hurts drafter had AJ Brown, which is pretty crazy.
I my guess would be, since most of these are hand built, right? Pretty much is if you're going to do any of these, you have to be really careful with your last few combinations, but you probably can still make good lineups, I would guess, but I don't know. We'd have to test it.
The other thing about it is where I would, the AJ Brown, Jalen Hurts. So AJ Brown's ADP was late round one and Jalen Hurts's ADP was early round four. They literally lined up like perfectly on the board. Mm. So it wasn't even like, you think about instances where it might be bad, where you're sacrificing value, you're reaching to get that stack. But it was like right at ADP, and maybe you can say it's a chicken or the egg situation and his ADP was there, but most people had him valued in a vacuum anyways as a fourth round value. So I do think that one being at the top makes complete sense because it's like you took AJ Brown with your first pick. You absolutely need 17 healthy games from Jalen Hurts for that bet to pay off. And then you're sitting there in the fourth round and you're going to pass on him. Like I understand why that dynamic is there.
You're talking BBM, BBM there, right? And correct. BBM, in BBM, though, we have so many different opportunities afterwards. We have 16 more picks to get different unique combos, get unique. Yeah. So it's a lot when you got 2/6 of your draft here in BRs with your Hurts Brown. So it's even less. I mean, I would just worry. I'm not sure. Like I said, we got to test it, but like, I think there's a lot of like four combos. Cause when we were doing our show with Davis, with Nerdy's code, there would be like, we like saw like a four man draft, like in two drafts in a row, like four exact combos.
Yeah.
And it's like, that can't be. I don't think that could be. Yeah. Okay. So we got three man pairings here. Okay.
Yeah. And it's no surprise then that, you know, again, I think part of the reason this dynamic occurs too is for a lot of these teams, and it's interesting, the three teams up here at the top, Eagles, Falcons, Cowboys, there were not a lot of attractive late stacking options or options throughout the draft. And it did feel like when you had Jalen Hurts, it was like, if you wanted to double stack him, it was like Goddard or bust. Like no one liked a wide receiver three there. Devonta and AJ Brown went early. And so like, it makes sense why these drafters were funneled that. Same with like Kirk Cousins. It was like two really obvious guys and then nothing else you wanted to do. So once you made your bet on one of those guys, people are like, I just want to complete this bet with the only viable pairings, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. The third one, Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, Devontae Smith.
And that's your week 17, bro, where Devontae, so CeeDee Lamb 101, 102, and Devontae's ADP was at the 2-3 turn. Before the schedule came out, like in earlier drafts, like Devontae was a later pick, and then he snapped up pretty quickly, I think, as a week 17 correlation play with CeeDee Lamb. And then he just became a fixture of the 2-3 turn because the CeeDee Lamb drafter was always willing to take him there. And then once you got the permission of like, well, his ADP is here too, all the other people did the pulling up for me, you know, now I'm just taking the guy at ADP. Yeah. It just lined up that way for the whole summer.
Does three-player combos matter in an 18-team best ball format? Like, I'm talking about, like, uniqueness-wise, like, trying to be different combos-wise. I mean, obviously it matters, right? Obviously it matters, but...
To me, when I look at these, it really is just that Dak, CeeDee, Devontae one that stands out to me, right? Because as I scan these, I believe that is the only one... There is a Hurts, Brown, Ferguson... But almost all of these are all just team level correlation. And I still think the power of that in making that single bet makes so much sense across the regular season and the pod dynamics. I do wonder about, is the benefit of the bring back in week 17 worth that kind of ownership to where even showing up in the finals, like if you have your Dak CeeDee teams that even a few other ones are also going to have spent their second or third round pick on the same bring back as you, when I don't know if the benefits are as outsized as that ownership would indicate, basically, for the bring back.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's really tough. BRs, we can test this stuff.
Yeah,
we can figure, well, not figure it out, but close enough. And but BBMs are a lot more complicated because you have so many weeks and injury risk and all that. And how do you, I mean, modeling that's going to be tough. Yeah, I think you're going to, I don't know. Well, you could do the toy game strategy that me and Dan do eventually, and then just make smaller examples and then extrapolate from there and then hope you're right.
Yeah.
To like solve this stuff. But like, I would say like, if this is a BR and you got 3 out of 6 in this, like you got to do something real different at the end, or just don't do it. Like Dallas Goedert here. Like I would just not take him in my, if he's like sixth round and I'm sitting there and I got AJ Brown and Hurts, but then
you're talking BR.
Yeah. I'm saying if this is BR,
for sure.
Goddard just becomes a shit pick now if he's in 20% of the lineups.
The other ones that kind of stand out to me, if I were to say, I don't love it. Because I do agree with you. I'm not really worried about the uniqueness for like these premiums, like the Kirk Drake Pitts stuff. Like I just don't have problems with that. Here's one that kind of jumps out to me. So Ja'Marr Chase, first round pick, Joe Burrow, you stack him up in what, like the 8th or 9th round. Mm-hmm. Jermaine Burton was the rookie wide receiver flyer super late. And he's not even seeing the field right now. And this isn't just revisionist history, but it's talking about, we know he was going after the ADP threshold of where it even predicts fantasy performance. And people were getting funneled to the same guy over and over again because of like autopilot stacking. And I think that's where you're getting in trouble, forcing the same stack over and over as the field on a really fringe asset just based on his ADP.
I would say even the fourth line up there with Michael Wilson.
Yeah. He falls in that range too. Yeah.
He might be in there too. And now, yeah. And then to your, what I think you're insinuating is, and then you're looking at 15% of the field has your stupid little late round. You don't care. I'm just going to correlate really quick pick. And now is that plus EV? Probably not.
Right. And this has nothing to say with it, whether it's going to work out. I actually don't think Jermaine Burton's going to work out. I actually think Michael Wilson might work out. But it just has to do with where you're taking them and the odds that it would. You're taking on too much ownership for the thinness of that bet.
It's like the worst case scenario, because like we're taking Burton because we're like, oh, he is a scroll the F down player, right? Because he's not going to be 100% owned. So we're getting that boost. And Joe Burrow is our quarterback. So if he goes off, we win. But the thing is, every time he's picked, it's the exact same combos. Totally the worst. So now you know, yeah, you get that ownership. You get that scrolly F down boost. But like every single time, you have the same three stack as everyone else. It's probably not every single time, but too many times.
It also illuminates, to give the field credit, when news broke in August, essentially, that Burton was buried and that Yoshi Voss was basically going to win that job. Yoshi Voss, who wasn't getting drafted hardly at all early on, he ended up being 50% rostered in BBM because basically he started to go in every single draft down the home stretch. And I do think that's a really good way to play it, right? Where it's like, not only am I getting a guy, Jermaine Burton ended up being what, still close to 100%, I assume. You're getting a half ownership discount on it, and you're sidestepping just almost a dead double stack right there that all torched it early on.
Yeah. And you also have to do this within context too, I think, because like what we saw in the uncorrelated best ball series we did was when your opponents make mistakes, you kind of just gobble up that EV. So like, let's say, you know, Hurts, let's just use Hurts Brown, and you take Brown in the first round, and then it comes back to you whenever Hurts is like clearly should have been picked 10, 20 picks ago or something. It now correlated is different. We haven't gotten there yet, but my guess is it's going to tell you your opponent just made a mistake. Grab Hurts in Brown, even though we know, from an equilibrium strategy that there's going to be this 20% combos already in there, you still should probably just eat up that EV and grab those mistakes by your opponents. So yeah, I don't know how far I would take some of this negative stuff we're talking about in context, because a lot of this stuff, these lineups are still going to be plus EV just because there's so many donkeys in a 600,000 man field.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, Paul bringing up the thing, you know, people would feel very differently about this if you divided the numbers by 12. I think where I stand is that any of these stacks that make sense, no one needs to be told about how strong the correlation is between a quarterback and two pass catchers. Like none of these strike me as crazy, Kyler, Dortch, McBride, or whatever. But the ones where it's either a super late pick, I guess Dortch is too, but, or the bring back where that correlation isn't as strong. That's where I feel I get a little queasy about it, where it just feels where maybe the scales tip too far. But any kind of quarterback with a double stack where it is like the clear top two on the team, it's just that doesn't strike me as bad.
Probably not. Why are we dividing by 12? I know there's 12 dudes in
there. They're talking about, because it's like, so that, say that if they're saying, because that Dak, or so let's say the Hurts AJ Brown at 50%, it's not 50% in the whole content. It's just because it's only on one of 12 rosters. So that 50% is 50% of drafts. Yes.
Yeah. In your pod. Yeah. But yeah, I thought that just went without saying that we're talking about like the playoffs, you know, you're going to have 50%.
Well,
possibly.
People love getting into the semantics of it, because I do it with the BRs too, where I say this player is getting drafted in 100%. And then they're like, well, actually, he's only drafted at one. Yeah. And it's like, yes, I know. But I mean the number of drafts.
I think it matters a lot more in BRs. I'm wrong, but I think it matters a lot more in BRs, because in BRs, they could only take him once. You know what I mean? You can only take him once per pod. But then we're all entered in a big GPP.
But that's the same as BRs. It's the same concept, a draft where you can only be taken once per pod.
Well, no, because you play against your 12 people first. Right. And then
I see what you're saying. There's a weeding out.
And then we have the 50%. Then we have the 50% to deal with after that in the playoffs of like, okay, of all the remaining teams, there's a higher likelihood of combos of Brown and Hurts being there. What does that do to our strategy?
Right. Because I think that is a better way to think of it. Like you show up in your week 15 pod and you have your stack, your Jalen Hurts, AJ Brown. But now your third round pick, or sorry, let's use the CeeDee Lamb, Devontae Smith one. And now your third round pick of Devontae Smith is like unnecessarily duped on even one or two other rosters in that pod. That's one of the biggest levers you're pulling in that pod to advance is my third round pick goes off. And now you're duped, you know, one or two times potentially. Like that does suck because it didn't necessarily need to happen that way.
And in a BR, you're automatically in against all the, I don't know who's number one this week. I haven't looked yet.
It's I think CeeDee. Yes.
CeeDee Lamb. Yeah, it is CeeDee Lamb. He had a Q tag though, so I thought maybe that would drop him. But so CeeDee Lamb is in all the drafts, obviously picked, but he really could only be only picked one time per draft. So like you're never going to get like, you know, 70% on Jordan Mason like you do in DFS. Because you and I can both take Jordan Mason in DFS, but in the pod structure of best ball, I think in some context, what they're saying is they're actually, he's not 100% owned because, you know, it's like, I guess it is true in some contexts. We list our ownership percentages though, as in like 100% owned. If he's drafted, he's drafted, even though, you know, you can only take him once.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hear people in here. So Jewish saying, you know, Lamb, Devontae, Dak, if you have like an eighth round Rashee Rice, I mean, you can do this in any format. You can say like, if you have the three chalkiest players on the DFS slate, but you hit the one sub 2% guy who goes for 30, it's not going to matter, which is obviously the case. It's saying all things equal the real question is, are you giving up a projection for that correlation in the draft? Were you making a slightly suboptimal pick to force that correlation? I think it's debatable with Devontae Smith. He was clearly part of that tier. But I do think it's a conversation of worth having because I saw someone mention the Amon-Ra CeeDee Lamb last year, which obviously hit, but those players were tethered to the 1-2 turn for all of drafting season. Devontae Smith did make a jump post schedule release because of correlation. So I do think it's fair to say, was that pick made because of week 17's correlation and not just because he was the best pick in a vacuum at that slot?
I would like to see the, because like I look at the ADP, especially in BRs, as like the public's opinion, you know, it's but when you factor in the correlation aspect of it, how much higher is Jalen Hurts or AJ Brown, you know, either or, because of the correlation factor, right? How many people are moving up? So maybe they don't really think that highly of this player. And then once that gets anchored into the drafter's mind, they see that ADP, does it have a doubling effect, right?
Right.
So like, let's say whatever Devontae Smith is, you know, I'm just making up a number, 12th or something, or, you know, second, you know, third round or something. Does now he go even higher because he's correlated, and even higher because his ADP is showing higher?
Yeah. 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 It definitely a little bit of the chicken or the egg there. And again, I don't think any of this is egregious, but I do think it's worth paying attention to. Stacking rates are up higher, and the field is clearly prioritizing week 17 correlation more this year. Like the third most popular three player combo was a week 17 oppo bring back. That's nuts.
That is crazy. That is crazy. I would do what Dan does, what Nerdy Tenor does. You want what to judge the health of a?
Oh, now I can't make the computer just get
ASMR. I told Davis he's got to tag our videos with ASMR. Get those extra clicks. And it's not false advertising. What he does is to like to judge the like the health of a contest is look at the shitty lineups. So like you really don't want to look at. I mean, looking at this stuff's great and it's interesting. And plenty of things you can get from it, but really, how many shit lineups were there? How many people were just paying the rake?
Yeah. And I mean, anecdotally, I still feel like, you know, when I would draft on stream and I would look at a lineup or whatever, I still feel like anecdotally, here's my bro science math, like 1.5 teams in every one of my drafts did seem like punted off in a way, like the structure was so egregious or whatever. Like, so I do think that's a good way to view it. We're always going to be analyzing the, like the tippity top of like the performers, like these stacks were driven by the best drafters. Like if you, that would be another fun thing. What if we retroactively splice out like the advance rate or the ROI of the teams who did this, these three player stack combos, because I think a lot of the bad drafters are not even showing up in these most common three player pairings.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the bad drafters, if there are like very few bad drafters, like we're all dead. We, you know, we're just trading variants. So like all this stuff is just pointless if there's no bad drafters, unfortunately.
That is a nut. We're gonna hop in a battle royale draft here in a sec, but it did just remind me of another thing, and that was interesting in the Nate Silver book is he did he basically I forget, it was one of the poker players, he basically like created like a mock tournament schedule of saying like this was your bankroll, what if you played all of these tournaments, you were gonna assume like an above average competency or whatever relative to the field, and then Silver simmed out the ROI, kind of like what our guy I'm blanking, who's our golf guy who runs the Sims, Nelson yeah, in showing like the expected scenarios across all of these sims and like barely profitable in like 50, you know, I think it was like 52% of them, like barely profitable. There were some where she went on like a 10-year, like, you know, like $5 million downswing, like being an above average player playing these tournaments that are super top heavy. And it was, again, that thing we talked about, like you could be really good at this and it's, you will never know. Like you will never know. And that's a pretty scary thought.
Yeah. It's almost like a certainty the best basketball player ever just it doesn't play. You know, just gave up.
Well, it's Davis. Man. We'll just never know. That's actually a feather in his cap. Davis can say I'm the best basketball player of all time. We'll just never know.
That's true. Yeah. If you haven't won one, you just say that you use that. And if you have won one, you say no, those are just the losers. They make excuses. Yeah.
These are the guys I lose to. All right.
So let's next entries one. Oh, you already have entries then probably. Cause it's still 150.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still 150. I've done a few this week. But we got some new updates to the caddy that I'm pretty excited about. So you guys initially had, spread and total, which were very helpful, but now you can see my new number and I'll try to zoom in here a little bit better. We got the ownership projections, Brian. So kind of explain what people are seeing here.
Okay. And before I forget, the exposures still work too. If you guys want your BR exposures, you can grab them. So it works the same way. You could just display those if you get a bunch of drafts in, you don't want to go too heavy on somebody. I think we're also going to change. It's the last green number. I think we're going to make it a percentage. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's not that.
I switched my, I put the spread in between the total and the percentage because I wanted, I didn't want two of the bigger numbers right next to each other. So I like the spread to break it up. But yeah, the percentage might be helpful.
And we're still tweaking. So, but every time you do a draft, it should recalculate. Like, hopefully.
Do you know what I'd honestly say? I'm not sure.
What?
And maybe people will disagree with me who also use the caddy. I would kind of say you don't have to put a number if it's 100. Like it could just not be there where it just shows me the ownership if it's not 100. Because I just, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because, you know, the top 25 are all 100 anyways. But
I think for noobs, that might be a problem. I'm going to get a bunch of messages. Hey, where's the number for CeeDee Lamb? And you can see like some of these guys aren't 100 is probably just we need to clean up our stuff. I'm assuming CeeDee Lamb is 100%. Was he really questionable?
I don't know if he's practiced. They said it was just like a veteran rest. And there was a report that he was in no danger of missing this week.
That might be what's screwing up. But we're looking at that one and why a couple of these guys are at 95 instead of 100.
Yeah.
But yeah, there. Yeah, after that, they're all locked in. It's funny that it's pretty easy to do when they're all 100% owned.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I mean, and this is in, I think it where it really starts to get helpful is, you know, obviously when we get to the end of the draft. And you're going to see a big one. I just can't stomach the bump up here for Marvin Harrison here. I have been getting a decent amount of three wide receiver teams this week, but I'm just going to hop around here. I'm going to take Jalen Hurts. But like a good one, right? So like Zach Charbonnet, he's projecting incredibly well. His ADP is on the rise. But I think ETR has him as like the running back. I don't even know. It's high. And he's still showing here, I think 21%, which is about what this ADP would normally indicate too. So once you get down here, I think that's where it gets really helpful.
Yeah. Clearly. Maybe there'll be guys like higher up who you're like, man, I didn't think he'd be 95% owned.
Yeah.
I guess that could happen. And then if you're a no baller, you could just skip them.
Yeah.
What do you think James Conner's ownership is? 79%. Does that seem right to you?
No.
26.8.
At 26.8, I would assume he's north of 90.
Okay.
And in fact,
Later in the week, it'll be more accurate.
Yeah.
So.
And do you want to, I'm not asking you to reveal your special sauce, but for people who are wondering, where are these coming from? Do you have any answer for them?
No, that's proprietary, Pete.
Proprietary. So on this one too. Yeah. So obviously as you go down in ADP, I guess the other question I always have is it, does it account for kind of positional stuff or is it just blanketed? Cause obviously some positions like the QB and the tight end ownership, I think behaves a little differently than the running back and wide receiver.
Yeah. Yeah. Our stuff that we've used, you know, privately, Pete, me and you did not account for a position. Yeah. I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this does. Do you think we should add some of that stuff, by the way, make it manual?
No. I don't know. I think so many people like, I don't know, actually. It's a good question.
Yeah.
We could talk about people. I think people will like this for the desktop drafters, obviously. It's such a good, one of the things that's so, I think, fun about Battle Royales, and while it'll still be a slow march to being super efficient or say super solved or however you want to phrase it, is just the power of the anchoring bias with the ADP. And having those numbers here is a really good kind of like shake you out of your complacency with these, where it's really hard not to be like, all right, Chris Godwin's up here and yet he's going to be 84.2%. Why don't I scroll down here to a guy I like this way? Let's do Zach Charbonnet, who's going to project for more points than Godwin and is going to come at a fourth of the ownership.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was your fifth?
Sixth pick.
Sixth pick.
Yeah. Actually, Sharbs is like a good question for you. Like, how do you think about this? Because I was thinking about, you know, getting in drafts early in the week and this idea of, you know, closing line value and stuff like that, getting an ADP before it moves. But I think it's a little different with Battle Royale. Like, let's say Zach Charbonnet settles as like an ADP of like 25, which is possible once like the ETR ranks have their way and a lot of people draft off of him and he could be a big riser. Like, how do you think about that? Like right now when I drafted him, that draft percentage is correct, but it might not be correct by lock. How do you think through that dynamic?
That's like a parimutuel sports betting or it's parimutuel horse betting. It's like nearly identical, right? I'm trying to think of it. Yeah. So you know how the horse betting works. So like if you bet a horse at 8-1 an hour before they race, that's not how they do odds in horse racing. They wait till the last second, and then all the money comes in, and then they readjust the odds to be whatever the true odds are minus the rake. And so that's kind of what's going on here. So like, you got Zach Charbonnet at 22% owned or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But by Sunday, he might be 50% owned. There's nothing you can do about it. But
no.
Yeah. So like that. I mean, that works the same. Works the same way.
In the way I've been thinking about it is, so there's the 12 person drafts, right? Like the dog bowl, the goal line stand. And I think getting the closing line value or the early rises in there is much more meaningful, where 72 players are drafted. If you were getting Zach Charbonnet, say those drafts opened and you were, I don't know where he was going. Maybe someone can tell me, but say he was going in the sixth round and by lock, he's going in the third round or the second round. Like, I think that jump in a 72 player pool is pretty massive, but in the BRs, he's going to jump from, I just took him in the sixth round. On Sunday, I'll probably be able to get him in the fourth round. And I'm not even sacrificing that much. Like, I'll be able to build, I guess the point I'm saying is I'm way more willing to chase the CLV in the 12 person than the six man, because I'm going to be mixing up my bets anyways in rounds 4, 5, and 6 in a way where it's like, I'm not just trying to pile in on Zach Charbonnet, because I don't think that 2-round rise even kills you by the time Sunday rolls around in the BRs.
Right. I mean, there's a lot going on with that. You have him. Even if you, I'm trying to think, like, what on Sunday do you still take him? And you probably still do.
That's what I'm leaning toward. I don't think it matters.
Because although you think you got him at 25% when you drafted on Thursday, like, you don't. You still get him the same thing I do on Sunday. Whatever he ends up being, we both get him at the same thing. But you did get him 2 rounds later. But we both benefit from the 40% of drafts that didn't take him in the beginning of the week.
Right. And I guess I'm saying that the player, it's almost like I'm more envious of your position, because I took him as my scroll down, my differentiator on maybe an otherwise chalky by ADP team. Whereas when you took him in the fourth, you were then able to scroll down for your sixth pick, where I might have backed my way into a chalkier than I'd like lineup, whereas you get the benefit of getting like the settled ADP in building the teams and your combinatorial ownerships, like, or product ownership at a rate you're more comfortable with.
And your ownership's going to be a lot more accurate.
Yeah.
Your ownership projections will be a lot more accurate on Sunday if the draft doesn't fail by then.
Mm-hmm.
The Dog Bowl talk in chat here. Do people want ownership for Dog Bowl? Is that worth it, Pete? Like, for,
I would love it. I think it would be very helpful, because the Dog Bowl is a bit of a Wild West in that regard, because it's hard to map the ADP on, because it's the exact same ADP as the six man's in the 12 man's, even though the 12 man's essentially have their own ADP. Like, there's how many players that have an ADP of 35 in the Dog Bowl, yet 72 players are getting drafted each week. So, like, if you were able to crack that nut, I mean, I would love that.
Is it worth it for time and money spent in customers? Do people, enough people play it?
What if I told you it was $1 million idea?
Oh, my. This is, I'm going to be multimillionaire now.
Yeah.
The two little updates.
Yeah.
I don't know if enough people play it is what I'm saying, but we could do it.
So the one thing you have going for you, Brian, is the people who do play it are the people who would be willing to buy a tool to use it. I mean, the Dog Bowl qualifier specifically early in the week is like the biggest collection of sweaty underdog power users, the highest volume drafters on the site, like that's who is in these Dog Bowl drafts.
Touche. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, there's so much stuff to do. We'll see. Yep. It's either that or the other $1 million idea of calculating EV.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you have to pick one of the million, like, Davis gets the cut of his $1 million idea, I get the cut of this $1 million. Let's go with mine. Anything else? If people want to get access to that, Brian, that's thedraftcaddy.com. And I can also just show you guys here. Let me go over to my settings, just so you guys can see real quick how to add this once you are in. It's really easy from the Chrome extension. I use Chrome. You can do Mozilla too. You go to Best Ball Columns. You can't see the dropdown when I do it here, but there's dropdowns and you can see I've selected total spread BR ownership projections. Brian also mentioned, like, say I wanted to get rid of spread and I change this to, let's see, what would I do, Brian? My BR
exposures. If you
are, oh, yeah. It's just underdog exposures, right?
Underdog exposures. Yeah. That'll work for any, because it's, you can filter your exposures to whatever you want to see and then grab them.
Yes.
So BR or whatever.
Yeah. So it would be this one here. And then when you go back to the underdog, if you want those,
if you go to, yeah,
you just go to your completed, you go to your exposure tab, you pop this open, you hit grab exposures. It says auto exposures captured. And now when I go back into,
you can go to rankings graph, too. You can go to rankings and check it. Yeah, it's,
and then boom, you see right here, I somehow have 54.8% Amon-Ra through my early drafts and have not gotten an Alvin Kamara yet. So there you go.
You're does that mean you're getting earlier picks there? You're getting like 2-3?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? That's they got sick of the influencers getting the number one. It was too obvious. So they moved you guys down to 2-3. You know, they want to give you guys the free EV, but they can't make it so obvious. So they drop it.
It's actually funny you said that, because just the first batch, when I uploaded my ranks, I just autoed like a few batches. And then I'm then reviewing the teams, and like, obviously some of the scroll the F down guys that I had highly ranked, I was getting a bunch that made sense. And I was like, why is Amon-Ra in every one of these teams? It's like, do I have him ranked 101? And I'm like, no, I have him ranked right at ADP. And then I looked and I just got like the number two slot in like seven of my first 10 drafts. So I am not in Amon-Ra bowl this week. It's just the RNG.
Too late.
Anything else for you, Brian?
No, I'm going to go listen to some Christian rock. Maybe grab a couple BRs.
I might have to throw on some Switchfoot or DC Talk later.
Do it. Some Goose, maybe. You know, if you're gonna wind down at the end of the night.
A little goose
action, yeah.
Smoke a J, throw on some Goose 7 hours later.
Put a tie-dye on.
For me, like I said, we got the Shipcast tonight, 8 p.m., 8:15. I think we're going live. We'll be hanging out for the Jets Patriots game, and then tomorrow block party with JM, off and on the clock with the Badge Bros, and then I'm also going to be finishing up my Battle Royale Hidden Gems video for the Deposit Kingdom channel. Thank you guys for hanging out. I mean, we really showed our range today. Jam Band, Christian Music, Nate Silver, Best Ball Mania combos. You know, we do it all around here, Brian.
Oh yeah, well-rounded, very well-rounded.
We'll see you guys next week.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles, including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.